Now, hello, everyone, and welcome back for another episode of the Endless Barrel Podcast. I am, as always, your host, Keith Russell. This is the mental health show where I chat to everyone with a story to tell, as well as experts in their chosen field. On this episode, I'm delighted to say I'm joined by Joe Mascalo, all the way from Boston, Massachusetts in America. It's very early for her. Joe is a registered dietitian with a focus on eating disorders, but in particular, binge eating disorder and type 2 diabetes. Joe is also one of the people behind the online petition to decommission one of the controversial TV shows here in Ireland called Operation Transformation. And we'll have a chat with Joe about that as well. Oh, God, I'm out of breath after all. Joe, how are you?
Hi, Keith. Thank you so much for that lovely introduction. It's great to be here with you.
Grand. I'm wrecked. Look, listen, I'm going to hand it over to you now. Off you go. I'm wrecked after all that. Jesus. How are you doing? You okay?
Yeah, not too bad. Thank you.
Thanks for coming on. I know we have a bit of a time difference. Although, anyone listening, yes, she is Irish. Well, originally Irish, but she's not actually in Ireland, as I mentioned. She's over in Boston. So we have a bit of a time difference. So hopefully you'll stay conscious for the podcast. Right, let's go. So obviously, as we mentioned, I went on your website and you have about 20 different qualifications. If I start listening, we'd be here all day. But obviously, you focus on binge eating disorder and type 2 diabetes. And obviously, anyone who's familiar with my story, which I'm sure everyone's sick of me going on about at this stage, that's something that I've lived with for ages. So let's have a chat. Actually, before we do that, maybe, do you want to kind of give people a little bit of a background on yourself?
Yeah, sure. So my background is in dietetics. I am a registered dietitian. That's where my expertise lie in, you know, the realm of nutrition therapy for the treatment of disease. That's where I began out. But then I quickly became very enamored with the realm of eating disorders, mainly because throughout my practice and my work as a dietitian, I worked in lots of different areas. I worked clinically, I worked in clinics, I worked in the community. And there was always this thread of, you know, people would come to me for various different illnesses that they'd have, say such as type 2 diabetes. And there would always be this underlying issue with the relationship with food, with some kind of, there's always some kind of disordered eating at play at the same time as whatever else they were struggling with. And because eating disorders are such a taboo subject, the eating disorder was never treated. It was never brought to the fore. It was never highlighted. The person would present to me for nutrition therapy for their type 2 diabetes. And because of my expertise, I was able to pick out that actually this person does have an underlying eating disorder too. And when I started to describe to my patients about, look, these are the diagnostic criteria for certain eating disorders. Do any of these resonate with you? And they would go through the list and say, yeah, I do feel out of control around food. I do feel like food dominates my life. I do feel like I don't have a good quality of life because I'm constantly thinking about food and eating. And then that would empower the individuals to then go and seek support for their disordered eating. So it came to a time when I said, this is where my passion really lies in smashing the taboo of eating disorders, in particular binge eating disorder, because binge eating doesn't have the same look. It doesn't have the same stereotype as a typical eating disorder. You know, when you think of the term eating disorders, you think of a thin, white, privileged woman. But as you know, eating disorders affect everybody, every body shape, weight, size, every gender, every race, everybody. And so I found my why, I found my calling, and that is to smash the taboo of binge eating, which is now where I specialize. So I see people predominantly for people who resonate, who identify as having an issue with food in terms of feeling out of control around food, feel like they're constantly overeating or eating way past the point of fullness, or feel like food has just taken over their life, and then treat any underlying conditions as well, say such as type 2 diabetes, which, you know, not all my clients would have type 2 diabetes, but definitely a big proportion do.
Yeah. I'm glad you mentioned the fact that binge eating doesn't get kind of included in the same conversation that other eating disorders get, because I've kind of found that from talking about it as well, that, as you said, most people, when you mention eating disorders, think of female and very, very skinny, which is usually, you know, anorexia or something like that. So binge eating disorder for me doesn't really get, you know, it doesn't really get enough mentions. So I'm glad you said that, because it does affect everyone, and it does affect kind of all different shapes and sizes as well. And exactly, a lot of the stuff, the questions or a lot of the comments I would get is like, well, you look perfectly normal. And then you have to explain to them that, well, just because I'm not very, very skinny doesn't mean I didn't have an eating disorder, you know? So, and I suppose that's probably brings into the part where you said about stigma as well. There's a massive stigma when it comes to men as well. Have you found that?
Yeah, absolutely. I still do see predominantly women in my practice. I still think men just need that extra push to speak up about what they're struggling with. And then you're doing excellent work in that field and raising awareness about that.
Thank you. Thank you. There's another thing I just picked up on what you said, and I wanted to ask a question on this, because it's a question that I get asked a lot. What's the difference in disordered eating and an eating disorder? Or is there a difference?
There is a difference. There is, I'd say, quite a significant difference. But if you're comfortable using one of those terms over the other, that's fine. I always ask my clients, how do you identify? Do you identify as having an eating disorder? And they'll say, no, like that term just does not resonate with me at all. I'll say, fine, okay, how about the term disordered eating? And they say, okay, yeah, that is something I can get my head around. That sounds like my picture. That sounds like what I'm struggling with. The main difference is really, is that eating disorders have a very set criteria for diagnosis. So to be formally diagnosed with an eating disorder, you need to formally fit all of these boxes that are set out in the DSM-5, the Diagnostic Statistical Manual for Mental Health Disorders. And I guess if you're speaking, like if you're technically speaking, a diagnosis of an eating disorder is not given unless you meet those very specific criteria. Now, having said that, many, many people, most people, I'd say, don't formally fit all those boxes for an eating disorder. And so they either never receive the diagnosis because their GP or their psychiatrist, psychologist won't diagnose them unless they do fit all those boxes. And then they'll be, I guess, asked to consider about using the term like disordered eating instead. So the only difference is that eating disorders are usually formally diagnosed, whereas disordered eating isn't. You may fit some of the boxes and not others, and in which case you may feel more comfortable using the term disordered eating. So there is a difference, but ultimately it comes down to what you're comfortable using.
Okay, right. So if you don't tick all the boxes, do you not get the same care as someone who is diagnosed with disordered eating? Am I making any sense with that question?
Yeah,
go on.
Especially in Ireland, I know certainly in the UK as well, maybe not so much here in the States, but in the UK and Ireland, ticking all those boxes, unfortunately, is of paramount importance in order to receive publicly funded treatments. Mm. And that is why those diagnostic criteria exist, because if the diagnostic criteria exist, then you can formally say, okay, there's this amount of people in our population who have these diagnostic criteria, therefore we need to provide services for them. Whereas if you don't tick all the boxes, well, then it becomes a little bit more nebulous, and treatments are not so easily accessible for those clients. Unfortunately, I mean, incredibly unfortunately, this should not be the case. If you identify as having an eating disorder, you deserve care, you deserve treatment, you deserve help. Unfortunately, if you live in Ireland or the UK, you probably will have to seek it privately.
Yeah, I've had people on the podcast, and I've got some blogs up on my website from some other people. And the stories that I've heard from the likes of that is just, it's heartbreaking. It's just, it makes you angry. Well, look, that's probably that's a conversation for a whole different podcast altogether. So when I was asked what was the difference, my answer, and by listening to what you're saying, I was probably wrong. My answer was, everybody has some sort of disordered eating, but it's when it kind of consumes your everyday life and nearly takes control of your thoughts and your actions and all that type of stuff is when it becomes an eating disorder. Is that wrong, or am I kind of on the right path with that?
Yeah, that's a very, very valid way to describe it too. Disordered eating can be considered, I guess, a bigger umbrella. And okay, may not consume your whole life, but you do spend more time than somebody without disordered eating thinking about issues relating to food. So yeah, you can think about it that way too.
Okay. So if I was to kind of come into you or to contact you and say, look, I think I have a problem, but I'm not really sure. Like, what questions would you ask? And the reason why I'm asking you to go through, you know, your whole thing now, but basically what I'm asking is, how would somebody kind of realize that maybe they have a problem with binge eating? I know because look, I had it for a long time, so, and I probably still have an issue with it now to a point. But like, what would people look out for, maybe in themselves or it may be a family member?
Yeah, good question. And I think it's good to be aware of what to look out for, especially if you're concerned about somebody else. So the signs and symptoms, I guess, of binge eating disorder, there's three main ones. Feeling out of control around food. So feeling like you can't stop eating, that if there's something in your fridge that you want to eat, that there's no way that you cannot eat it, that it's calling your name until it's gone. Second one is eating a large amount of food, larger than most people would eat in that situation. So larger than what is appropriate for that situation, I guess. And then thirdly, it's followed by feelings of regret, feelings of shame, feelings of guilt.
So I had a quick look on BodyWise website earlier on, okay, because I just wanted to get a quick definition just for myself. And I'm going to read it back to you, and then I'm going to tell you something after. So I'm just going to read this to you. So a person affected by binge eating disorder may find themselves trapped in a cycle of dieting, binging, self-recrimination and self-loathing. They can feel particularly isolated, which can contribute to a prolonging of their experience, right? So I read that, and then I always say this, the name of this podcast and my website is The Endless Spiral. That's exactly where the name came from, because I always felt like I was caught in an endless spiral of self-loathing, of everything, you know, like the list is endless. I read that and I'm like, you always feel like you're alone. You always feel like you're isolated. You always feel like no one understands, but they do. Do you know? I mean, would you get that from many people when they come to see you? They nearly feel like their story is unique, and obviously it's unique to them, but their traits and their, you know, their emotions and all that type of stuff is so similar, you know, it's so common.
I bring it back to what I said at the beginning about how I found my why, how I found my calling to smash the taboo of binge eating, because like any taboo subject, it's not widely spoken about. People don't share their experiences. People tend to suffer alone until they get to a point where it's causing a complete upset in their life, in which case they may seek help. But it's worthy knowing that also many people don't seek help for it ever and struggle with binge eating until the end, until they, you know, I've worked with women well into their 80s who are still struggling with binge eating and have done for a very long time. Feeling alone, feeling lonely, feeling isolated, feeling like I'm the only one in the world struggling with this is very, very common. And I just beg you to plead with you to know that you are not the only one struggling with this. It is incredibly common. I bet there is someone in your life close to you, a family member, a friend, a colleague who is also struggling with this. You never know what is going on behind closed doors.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what it is. Right. So another question for you is, and these are the things that I never really thought about when I was kind of binge eating. You know, I was too busy kind of, and I'm sure the reason why I'm saying this, and probably other people are as well, kind of living in your own head and, you know, the self-loathing and the depression and all this type of stuff. And maybe you don't think of the health issues. So obviously we mentioned diabetes type 2 at the beginning. I want to ask you a bit more about that. But then there's other health issues as well, isn't there?
Yeah, there are. And I think type 2 diabetes is one that most commonly presents to me. But there's other conditions, sure, like people will come to me and say, oh, I was diagnosed with high cholesterol or diagnosed with high blood pressure. And my doctor immediately recommended that I tried to lose weight, I tried to diet, but the thing is, I'm struggling with binge eating. I can't embark on a restrictive plan because it will just, I will just end up binging even harder. So this is where I come in strongly as a dietitian. So people often say to me, you're a dietitian, you know, binge eating disorder is a mental health condition. And surely I should be seeing a mental health professional, or I should be seeing someone like a psychologist or a psychiatrist to address the mental health side of things. And that is true. Mental health professionals are incredibly useful for binge eating and binge eating disorder. But I want you to know, and I want your listeners to know, that one of the main causes for binge eating is the restriction part. And restriction always comes out of trying to diet or trying to lose weight. So where my role comes in as a dietitian, as an eating disorders dietitian, is to help you to escape that cycle of always being on a diet, always seeking weight loss. And I mean this when I say that many of my clients will report that they try to start a new diet every single day. And by the end of that day, they're binging. And at the end of the binge, they say, okay, tomorrow I'll be good. Tomorrow's the day. So yes, binge eating is a mental health condition. But if you want to make progress in the mental health side of things, you need to also address the physical. And I think you should address the physical side of things first, because you're not going to progress too far with the mental health side of things if you are still ingrained in diet culture. If you're still starting a new diet every day, you will be binging by the end of that day. I think I went on a complete tangent from your question.
No, you didn't actually. No, because I was just thinking to myself, that just leads us perfectly onto what I was going to ask you next is intuitive eating, because you're a big advocate of that, aren't you? So talking to your mate Sinead from Intuitive Eating Ireland on the last episode, so she gave us a good insight and some good information on intuitive eating. But maybe we get your thoughts on it as well, because I always like to get different opinions on it. Would you find that many people find intuitive eating kind of easy to pick up or stick to?
Is it easy to pick up? I think parts of it can be easy to stick to. I think it's an interesting question, because you have to remember that intuitive eating, if you take it out of the context of the fact that we all live in a culture that's dominated by diets, and that we're all supposed to be trying to lose weight all of the time, if you take it out of that context, intuitive eating is just eating. So when you say, is it easy to stick to? I have to say, well, if you can't stick to it, then it's because it's not fitting for you. And maybe you're misconstruing it as being another kind of diet, perhaps. When I break down intuitive eating, I see it as being, it's a self-care framework. So it's eating in a way that feels good to you in that moment. It's about asking yourself, what does my body need right now? And trusting that the answer you get is the right one. So sometimes it's not related to food. Sometimes you ask yourself, what does my body really need right now? And it's, I need a cup of tea. I need a hug from my husband. I need to sit down. I need a snack. You know, so it can be a whole range of answers. So if we're bringing it back to binge eating, if you ask your body, what do I really need right now, straight after a binge, your body will tell you that the best thing you need to do there is to restrict, is to not eat now for the next day. And of course, that's not what we want. That is going to only make your binge eating worse. So intuitive eating needs to be approached carefully when you're struggling with binge eating. Some people find that developing intuitive eating really helps them to overcome binge eating, but most of my clients will say that in the beginning, it can make them more confused, and that they need a little bit more handholding. They need a little bit more structure before they turn inwards and ask their body, what do you really need right now? And trusting that the answer is the right one.
Yeah, I suppose when I said easy to stick to, obviously I didn't phrase right. What I meant is changing your mindset, really, is what I meant. And obviously changing your mindset can be quite difficult. I suppose when you're in this endless spiral, a bit of a plug, an endless spiral all the time, it can be hard to just snap out of it, you know. Do you know what I wanted to ask you, right? I know you're living in America and you lived in the UK as well, but I'm just going to ask kind of on an Irish question here. Do you find that there's enough of a conversation in Ireland about eating disorders? Obviously in men and women as well.
Yeah, I mean, that's just a no-brainer. Like, I could answer that one in my sleep. Of course there's not. Yeah. There's not even enough talk about the eating disorders that people would say are more, I guess, life threatening, if you know, if we can put it that way, in terms of like, say, most likely to result in hospital admission. I'm talking about the restrictive eating disorders such as anorexia nervosa. There isn't even enough discussion about that. Not saying that's more important than the other eating disorders. No, it's not. Binge eating disorder is incredibly prevalent in all Western countries. In Ireland, I do believe it's the most common eating disorder. But if we can't even have a conversation about the ones that are, you know, less stigmatized, such as because binge eating disorder is stigmatized out of them all, if you can't even have a conversation about the ones that aren't, you know, where, how are we going to get any support, any help for binge eating disorder?
Yeah, yeah, especially, well, not especially, but in particular, men, you know, coming from, you know, from my story and speaking to other men, you know, it's just, you know, as Barry, I always say this every week, people be sick of me saying this, but well, Barry from Bodywise, he said that, you know, men are the untold stories, and he's right. I mean, it really is. I know there's a stigma, but there's almost certainly a stigma when it comes to men, you know, like coming forward, you know, speaking out, sharing, whatever way you want to call it, it's all the same thing, really. And it's, men just go undiagnosed for such a long, long time. Right, that leads us on to my next topic, right? And this is something I know you're quite passionate about, and it's something I mentioned in the intro, which is you're one of the people behind the online petition to decommission Operation Transformation. Now, obviously, if you're listening to the last podcast episode, we had Sinead from Intuitive Eating Ireland on, and she had her say on it. But I want to get yours say on it as well, Joe, because obviously the more conversations about this, the better. Look, if anyone outside Ireland is listening to this, you're not sure what Operation Transformation is, I'm going to let y'all explain a bit better, because she's obviously been campaigning about this for quite a while. So off you go, Joe.
Yeah, sure. So Operation Transformation is our weight loss TV show. It's, some have considered it a national treasure. I cannot even stand that that's how it's been thought of. It is our weight loss TV show. It's been on our screens for 15 years. It's the 15th season of it now. It comes back year after year. Five participants commence this very restrictive weight loss plan for 8 weeks. At the end of the 8 weeks, they have come on and have this massive transformation. They've completely transformed their lives in every single way, shape, and form. It is, as I said, it's considered a national treasure. So when I came out and spoke publicly along with Sinead from Intuitive Eating Ireland, and we said that this show is harmful, this show is contributing to weight stigma, it's contributing to anti-fat bias in our country, it's contributing to eating disorders and very disordered eating behaviors that it promotes, and we want it gone. And you know, I'm highly qualified, highly credentialed professional, you know, I do hope that I can maybe consider working in Ireland again one day. I really was concerned that I was going to burn a lot of bridges by speaking publicly about this, because I'm a dietitian. It's my job to, you know, make people healthier through food. And yeah, okay, maybe that is the case, but that does not necessarily mean that weight loss is the answer. And as I've just alluded to so far in this podcast, most of my clients who struggle with binge eating have been harmed by dieting, have been harmed by trying to lose weight. So I operate now from a weight neutral approach. I don't promote weight loss. I don't promote dieting. So of course it was natural for me to speak up publicly about our national treasure of Operation Transformation. I was so worried speaking publicly about it. About a year ago, we designed a petition because we had spoken to people who were on the show and people who watched the show, who find that when the show is on, it triggers them to be more concerned about things like calorie intake, counting calories. If you are in a room watching this with your family and one family member is in a bigger body, then of course it's the natural reaction for all heads to turn and look at that person in the bigger body and say, well, look, you should be trying to lose weight too.
Yeah, good point.
And then this individual then becomes a new client of mine because they try to lose weight and they struggle with binge eating. And yeah, so we set up a petition a year ago to try and get this taken off air. And I'm so grateful that I did. I did have a lot of hesitancy about doing it for the reasons I explained, but I'm so glad that I did, because we have gotten a lot of support for it. We have almost 10,000 signatures now, which is absolutely incredible. And only last week, I had the honor and the privilege to direct my concerns about the harm against individuals who watched the show and who are on the show, to the clinical lead for obesity in Ireland, Professor Donal O'Shea. So that was a real turning point in the campaign, because someone in that position has the power to make a big impact, has the power to pull the show, maybe. You know, he would certainly have a lot of influence. And if you've listened to the interview, it was on an Irish radio station. His defense was quite weak against the show. So yeah. I do think that maybe this time next year, unfortunately not this year, it's, the show is being aired currently, but maybe this time next year, we're going to have enough of a sway that the producers consider decommissioning it and stop harming the public who watch it. You know, a certain, you know, like, there's no research to say that Operation Transformation causes harm, but we know from other weight loss shows in other countries that weight loss shows do contribute to anti-fat bias, weight stigma, and eating disorders.
Exactly. And then, as Nate was saying on the last episode, to give people in other countries a bit of a comparison, it's like the Biggest Loser, that was obviously in the States and the UK and Australia and all these other places, and they're all gone now, aren't they?
Yeah, so the Biggest Loser did have a little, it came back briefly, but I do believe it's gone again. Mm. And thankfully, the Biggest Loser, there was research done about it to show that when people watch the show, they are more likely to dislike people in bigger bodies, which is just absolutely horrific to think, because even if you're a listener, if you're listening to this and you're in, you know, a normal, what you would describe as a normal size body with a normal BMI, you know, I use normal in quotation marks because what's normal?
Yeah.
But I bet that you have someone in your life who is in a bigger body. And if you think about the harm that can be done to them from watching, from contributing to anti-fat bias, or if they are constantly thinking that they should be losing weight, that's going to have incredible harm to them.
Yeah, exactly. And I put the link to the petition in the last podcast description. I'll do the same in this one.
Thank you.
What backlash did you think you were going to get, or what backlash did you get? Because obviously all I've seen is support for you. Obviously it's been in the media, it's all over social media, there's hashtags trending. You even got spoken about in the Dáil, which is the Irish government over here. So it got a lot of support, but did you have any backlash?
There is backlash, certainly. There absolutely is. Okay. What I was concerned about is that people would look at the campaign and say, but a weight loss TV show is good. It's good for motivating people to lose weight. It's good for getting people up and moving and eating more nutritious foods. And the thing is, that all is... So what the backlash that I was expecting and the backlash that we got is because people think that... a weight loss TV show motivates the nation. A weight loss TV show motivates people to eat well, to eat healthy, to add more nutritious foods. But the thing is that motivation is not, motivation does not help people to become healthier. In fact, it has the opposite effect. So when people, the backlash I've gotten is, oh, well, this is a really motivating show. And my counter argument to that is, well, motivation, trying to instill motivation in people to lose weight has the opposite effect. It makes them more likely to engage in disordered eating behaviors, more likely to withdraw from healthcare services, more likely to not make any changes. So the backlash, you know, has been predominantly like, well, this is a motivating TV show, and I'm glad that I have a good counter argument for that.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, brilliant. Look, maybe we'll wrap that up because I think we've covered everything as well. Is there anything that you want to add before we go, Joe?
Just if anybody is listening who is struggling with binge eating, feeling alone, feeling like you're the only one going through this, I do give lots of free, tangible, practical advice on my podcast. It's called the Binge Eating Dietitian Podcast. And I hope that will help to make you feel a little bit less alone in your quest to overcome it, which, you know, is what we want. And binge eating disorder is has the highest recovery rate from all the eating disorders. So I hope that you can have hope that you will get over this.
Yeah, I totally echo that. Look, I am a walking example of that. Trust me, it is possible. So actually, just before we go, started recording, we were chatting about your podcast, and you've had a great response to your podcast, and you were saying that it's been a great way for you actually to get your message out because you keep your episodes quite short. So how have you found recording the podcast? Is it quite therapeutic for you to be able to know that you have a platform there that can help you get your message out kind of so easily, really?
Absolutely. You know, of course, I always like give the disclaimer, like it's not a substitute for medical advice. You know, you always seek support from your own therapy team. But for me to be able to just sit back and just preach everything that I speak about with clients that helps them to overcome binge eating, that I can just give out to the world and let you apply it to your own life without ever having to speak to anybody, you know, without ever having to commit to therapy or nutrition therapy if you're not ready for that. It's really great. So I'm so happy that I've started it. And yeah, there's almost 100 episodes now, so you can really sink your teeth into it.
Yeah, and it's everywhere. I was looking at it actually last night on Apple and Spotify and all, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. And our little they're like mini podcasts, aren't they? They're only about 15 minutes, so they're actually perfect. I mean, like you can hop, you've listened to it, you know, I was going to say in the car, I don't mean if you're driving, well, obviously, you know, your headphones on, but you know what I mean? Like, they're really, really short. It's actually maybe mine are too long.
But in them, I give real tangible advice, practical things that people can do. So even though the episodes are short, I think it does spark off you to go away then and do some of the work yourself.
Yeah.
So you can apply it to your own life, which is when you'll get the most benefit from it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. We better go and give you your website and your socials a plug as well, Jill, before we let you go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure. So I'm active on Instagram. I'm at binge.eating.dietitian. My website is bingeatingdietitian.com. And yeah, feel free to send me an email or, you know, message on Instagram. I'd love to hear you and your story and what you thought of this chat today.
Right, we're going to wrap this up, Joe. Thanks very much for coming on and having a chat with us. Like I said, it's been very informative for me because it's kind of quite personal to me, but hopefully it's been informative for everyone else as well. Right, guys, we're going to head off. I'll be back again very soon with another episode of the Endless Spiral podcast. Bye for now.